Today's featured guest, Peter Grandich from Money Talks. Welcome back, Peter Grandich.
Thank you for having me.
I thought we could start off today with, you know, a discussion on Hugo Salinas Price and his efforts as president of the Mexican silver, introducing undenominated silver coins into several countries, including his own nation, Greece as well, as emergency money. And he adds that countries continue buying gold. Russia, China seem to be preparing for some big event, he thinks, is a result of Western meddling. I'd like your thoughts as to whether or not you think this could be an emergency plan that every listener should be thinking about, some type of contingency.
I think we always have to have a contingency. I think history has demonstrated that no paper currency forever remains the strength of what it may have at a particular time in history and eventually collapses or disappears. And certainly in the state of geopolitical environment that we see here throughout the world, it certainly is something that's of a positive nature. And I just think it's just wise, just as it is to have 6 months' worth of supplies, both food and money and what have you. It's the same as, you know, having something as an alternative to paper currency, no matter what paper currency you may be using.
We've all seen what can happen to any currency. I mean, look at all the turmoil, particularly in South America as well as in the Eurozone. I mean, we're seeing country after country now. And we're also seeing negative interest rates from Scandinavia all throughout Central Europe. So the central bankers and the powers that be understand there's a currency war. It's global in scope, and it has and will have far-reaching effects. I mean, as Americans, we feel insulated, but we have to remember that we are only 25% of the world economy, which if we kind of take the complement of that equation, you recognize that, yes, 25% may be a big chunk, but there's another 75% out there, so we're not completely insulated. Today, Fed Janet Yellen waived a copy of the central bank's audited financial statement before Congress in front of Dr. Ron Paul's son, Rand Paul, a prop for transparency, if you will. But, you know, there are some detractors who are concerned there is very little transparency. We're not sure what's going on behind the scenes at the Fed. We haven't pulled the curtain back yet. Tell us what you think about this effort on the Fed's part. Is this merely just a smokescreen?
My always belief, even though when we go in a court of law, we're not supposed to hold it against somebody if they decide not to testify. If I'm innocent, I'm going to testify no matter what. I can't see how not testifying helps my cause if I'm innocent. If I'm not afraid that they're not going to find gold in Fort Knox, go take a look. I'll lead the congressional and Senate leaders myself around if I'm the Fed chairman. The bottom line is it was a smokescreen. It has always been a concern. An audit would show horrific, terrible things that would, you know, could rock the economic world and tear it apart. My view is that as much as we now have supposedly yet another investigation into banks manipulating gold, look, you don't have to have an investigation. Now, the problem is 99.9% of the world doesn't watch gold trade each day, certainly not the way the public watches the stock market or what have you. But those of us who still do see just total abnormalities happen time in and time out. You can't go down 98% of the time every time there's an employment number. You can't always have a rise in Asia, and as soon as London opens, we just peel off. You can't drop, you know, 2% in 5 minutes when there's no supporting news and all. I mean, those things are just not normal. And this is to me, the smoking gun, is that we've already seen legitimately that all other markets have been manipulated. So why on earth could anybody somehow think that at the door of the COMEX, the manipulation stops? I mean, it's absurd, but because so few people have a direct interest in it, it doesn't get traction. And unless someone comes out and admits to something terrible, which first kind of breaks on TMZ, not on CNBC, and then it snowballs, it's going to take a real whistleblower to finally come out, because we all know that anybody that's watched it for years, the gold market and silver market is used mostly for manipulated side to the downside, not the upside.
It appears to be central bank officials' favorite mechanism to help with the monetary plans they put in place, because they have that leverage there, constant manipulation charges.
As much as I believe you're right that governments use the markets, I also believe that what's happened is, because there's such a narrow participation and the public at large is not involved, I think those that are left in the trading have concluded that, hey, listen, we could push this market around when we want to, and pushing it down, any market is always easier to push down than up. And so what happens is, those who may not be involved in the manipulation know it's happening and they're pros, so they step aside or they join in it, and it becomes really a self-fulfilling prophecy. And it's really become acute now. It happens so often and so regular that even those of us who still watch it on a regular basis kind of accept it. It's really not giving any impetus to someone to get on the long side, because your feeling is, hey, if I go long, I'm only going to get crushed by these people. What do I need to do that for? And so I really think they have controlled the market. And if not for the real physical demand that underlines this market, the paper pushers probably would have succeeded all along with the belief of getting it below 1,000. But it's the physical demand that eventually overpowers that selling short and limits to how much they can move it around. But they still make a decent dollar, and it's on the short side. You just can't have 98 out of 90 times a market going down in a certain period and around certain economic events. It's just, scientists will just tell you, economic statistics would argue that that's just not right, that there's something artificial being done to have that happen. But no one really cares, because there isn't really any general public participation.
It all seems to come back to the lack of transparency, and that's where that battle occurred today, I think, in Congress. The powers that be argue, look, if we telegraph what we're doing and what our plans are, then every deep-pocketed investor around the world will simply front-run us, and they will destroy what it is we're trying to do. That's their argument for secrecy and lack of transparency. What it does, though, I think, is allow a very small cabal to run the show and do precisely what you just outlined, and that is make sure that the system is gamed in their favor.
One of the things I would say is, if we talk to anybody that's still in the gold market, no one would be willing to make any bet, no matter what odds you give them, that suddenly there's going to be a $30 or $40 pop to the upside. The only way they'll make that bet is, I'll bet it to the downside. And the reason that is because that's basically all that's basically happened over these last several years. And call it gold cartels, call it the Crimex, as I like to call it, call it whatever you want, or maybe just that the simplicity of it is, those that remain in it know that, if anything, it's going to be pushed to the downside and not to the upside. But I do believe this. I do believe that the Federal Reserve has greatly overstepped its purpose. And the financial markets, while it's working for them now, are going to pay a very dear price. And what I mean is this. The mandate and what the Federal Reserve was created for was to protect and help serve the banking system. It was not supposed to be the engine that pulls not only this economy, but the world economy around. But because there's been so lack of fiscal responsibility from both sides of the aisles for literally a couple decades now, whether it chose to, was forced into it, or a combination of both, it's taken over that role as well. And as good as it is right now for those who are benefiting, the big banks, the financial institutions, the stock market going and so forth and so on, it may not look like it to the naked eye, but they have painted themselves into the corner. And one of the difficulties I believe they're having right at the moment is to go ahead with the plan to raise interest rates as much as they want to. I am absolutely convinced the vast majority want to raise interest rates and raise them sharply. To do so now, especially with many signs that the economy is at least slowing from whatever pace it might have had a year ago, or even rolling over yet again, and what's happening around the world, to see any significant rise in interest rates right now could just kill whatever strength there is in the world economy. And so while it doesn't look like there's in a corner, they really are in a corner. And I can't figure out how they get out of that corner without some sort of crisis or some sort of prolonged underperformance. And what I'm noticing also in these last several weeks is many former bullish commentators, what have you, are seeing that and are noting shifts and desires to move away from U.S. asset base and going to what looks to be far more fairly valued assets across the seas. And you said earlier about a currency war. I don't know, Chris, if it's much of a currency war as a currency race. And what I feel in the difference is in a war, you know, you're looking to beat the other side and destroy them. I really think it's more of a race, and countries are trying to debase their currencies to stimulate the economies and really maybe don't care what that does to others, but their concerns about themselves. And while it looks good for America now that the dollar has done what it's done, it's really, really going to be detrimental to our system, because what we're going to see is, and we're already seeing it, is we're going to see that shift away from the United States for money flows and what have you. And the soon, eventually, no matter how much money the Fed creates, it's not going to be able to move our economy forward. And these are like big battleships. You can't turn these things overnight. So there's a significant slowdown in America coming simply because of what's happening in the currencies, let alone all the other economic and geopolitical concerns that are impacting the U.S. economy.
Well, exactly. And when you talk about currency race, it's the race to the bottom, as we all know by now. And interestingly, that has one impact that just is inevitable. You cannot escape it, and that is rising prices. And I like to discuss an interesting article published today, actually, about inflation beginning to rear its head again in Japan. And it wasn't even a gold-centric article, but it just immediately started to raise flags in my mind when I saw that people are finding it difficult in Japan, of all places, to make ends meet and to buy just basic necessities. Some searches online after reading the article and started to look at the wine Weimar inflation and other inflations, and it showed the price of gold in marks from 1916, 1917, 1918. Gold was exactly at the current price. It was bouncing around about 800 to 1,000 marks. Then suddenly it spiked up to 1,200, 1,300. You know, we can compare that with the U.S. dollar terms of gold today. In the blink of an eye, it was at 10,000 marks, and then 100,000 marks. And then, you know, it went up to something like 100 quadrillion marks. I mean, just an unfathomable number. You just saw these hints. You had these telltale signs where just a few people were prescient enough to take some steps to insulate themselves, prepare for what was coming. Given this backdrop, do you think that we could see, not the same, I don't expect history to repeat, but could we get a rhyming effect here? I mean, could we see these negative real rates finally usher in a tidal wave-like effect in prices?
Because interest rates have become down to next to nothing, and so is inflation, it won't take a large increase to see or feel as if there's been a large percentage increase. In other words, it's not going to take much to, on the upside, to get a sense of feeling that it's moving back up. And that is normally movement of feeling versus results. You know, when people in the heights of bad inflation, people ran out because if they don't buy the bread today, in an hour it could be a lot higher. It really was only because everybody else was thinking that, not because it was that much more costly to produce that.
By the time people recognize that's occurring, good luck finding any gold or silver or anything that could insulate you.
Right. What I found most interesting in these last several weeks, in fact, I just shared that in a talk last week, I found perhaps the most interesting thing in 2015 to me was the tremendous turnaround of Alan Greenspan, who has started to talk in some of the things that we've spoken about today. Here's a guy that if you read when he was chairman of what he viewed the world and what he said and what he's now speaking about, you could almost, he's not there yet, but he certainly could attend a Goldbug meeting. It's really interesting that that man, who's really the godfather of where we are today, there have been successors, obviously, at his post, and Bernanke and now Yellen, but clearly much of why we're at where we are now is because of what he led to this point. To see him be so critical and so overly concerned now, to me, is a man who's realizing he made and was part of some very, very serious errors in judgment. I really believe that the unspoken news of 2015 has been the change in the man of Alan Greenspan and his perceptions. And so when I tie that into seeing people like Robert Shiller say after years and years it's time to move away from U.S.-based assets, and seeing all sorts of key people, maybe not the talking heads yet, that are flooded on places like Tau TV and CNBC, but the last of the really independent people out there are becoming really, really concerned. I think you have to take notice.
You know, with all due respect to him, I fear that he really was duped. Sort of went along with the party line and really believed the mantra, we can control this genie. If we let this monetary genie out of the bottle, you know, we can always contain it if we want to. We can do what Paul Volcker did in the 70s and 1980 and contain it. Ironically, I'll bet he is quietly accumulating substantial precious metals.
He's openly spoken about it, which is unfathomable if you think about what we thought of when he was chairman and what our mindset was. To hear him actually speak as he's spoken as now, so-called, as a private citizen. Now, if you take that one step and if you go to the Don't Worry Happy Crowd on Wall Street and say, hey, wait a minute, this was your guy. I mean, this is the godfather of what's transpired, and he's now telling to own gold. Hello? They probably go, oh, he's lost it. You know, he's gotten old. He's got dementia. They couldn't begin to rally around the thought that someone of his nature and his background could actually suggest owning gold. And I think that's probably the most overlooked geoeconomic factor of what's taken place in these last few months.
It's the wake-up call. He must have caught considerable flack. Unfortunately, I'm afraid that history might view him as an unwitting John Law of our generation, because it was that ideology created this monster where we have to loosen the restrictions that came from the 1930s, from the last speculative credit expansion-based boom. All of that conspired together to lead to the greatest housing boom and then bust in history, stock market bubble, and many other bubbles. And now it's a giant mess. Sadly, just like John Law, was really almost a victim of his own success. And, you know, I didn't even get a chance to ask you how the operation went. I understand there was a procedure done.
Right. It's not a major one, a foot operation. I'm hopping around at the moment, but everything should go well. And thank you very much for asking.
Well, we wish you a speedy recovery, sir. Could you tell folks more about the interesting services that you provide?
Sure. I do write for MoneyTalks.net, and then I have a retirement estate planning and business planning firm in New Jersey called Trinity Financial Sports and Entertainment Management.
Very good. We want to thank you for your thoughts today, sir.
Thank you.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of Gold Seek.
Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.